Welcome, listeners, to a new episode of Criminal Mind, a brand new true crime podcast that delves into shocking cases that all tie into mental health. I'm Raviv, and thank you again so much for tuning into last week's episode, which was just our second episode. Our premiere was 2 weeks ago, and to be totally transparent, I really didn't expect anyone to listen. I announced this super last minute because I wanted to make sure that I had everything prepped and ready beforehand, and then I got kind of impulsive and excited. This week's case is one that just a year ago came to its end, so putting the sources I found in chronological order and making sure I had the pieces correct was more difficult than the scripts for our first two episodes. I liked the increasing challenge, though. It not only helps me evolve into a stronger writer, but a more efficient researcher as well. Again, if anyone has suggestions for cases to focus on in an episode, please reach out to me on socials at IamRaviv across the board and let me know. I would like to warn listeners beforehand that this episode is graphic and may be upsetting. Please listen with caution. And with that, let's take a swim in the mind of a criminal. Welcome to Criminal Mind. On July 4th, 2016, Stephanie Diane Smith, also known as Stephanie Diane Cooper, suffocated her 4-year-old daughter, Zadie Wren Cooper, with a pillow while she was sleeping. She called 911 seeking help from the police and told them that her daughter Zadie was not breathing. First responders swiftly arrived at Smith's home to find her performing CPR on Zadie. Zadie was transported to a local hospital where she remained unconscious and on life support for 3 days. Zadie Wren Cooper passed away on July 7, 2016, 3 days after her mom called 911, after being declared brain dead and taken off of life support. Police immediately considered her death to be suspicious. According to the News Courier, when they questioned Smith, she told investigators that she heard a sound on the baby monitor, went into Zadie's room, and found her daughter wedged between the bed and the wall, unresponsive. At this point, despite what Smith had told them during their initial interview, the police had no clue what happened to Zadie. There was no evidence of a break-in, no evidence of a robbery gone wrong, no evidence of anyone else in the home. Smith was re-interviewed a few months later, in October 2016, but no new details emerged from this interview, and the police still found it suspicious. Smith's personal Instagram account painted a picture of sheer love and adoration for her daughter. She publicly mourned Zadie's death through a slew of Instagram posts, masking the fact that she was the one who killed her. Police had no idea that what they thought was an accidental death initially was actually a homicide. One of Smith's Instagram posts on January 7th, 2017, shows a smiling photo of Zadie and a lengthy caption that seemed to be written by a grieving mother. In the caption, Smith said, quote, "My heart is breaking all over again. It happens every day I wake up and remember she's gone." End quote. A secret kept from all. Nobody knew that Stephanie Diane Smith was in fact her child's murderer. The Instagram posts didn't just stop at mourning the death of Zadie. They also outlined a much darker, deeper part of Stephanie Diane Smith's mental health. She shared a photo of her daily medication, a handful of 13 different pills that she hashtagged with mental illnesses such as PTSD, borderline personality disorder, and bipolar disorder. She used hashtags on other posts such as hashtag YayMentalIllness and hashtag MentalIllnessAwareness. This opens up a completely different part of this case, and although I'm going to delve more into this later on in the episode, it's important to mention now because Smith's social media posting made it seem like she had no clue what happened to Zadie. She continued to post on social media, openly mourning the loss of the daughter that she killed, and nobody knew. Zadie's family ordered an autopsy, looking for any answers that they could possibly find about what happened to her. The situation was just too suspicious. The autopsy results showed no clear cause of death. It showed nothing, and the family was just confused. None of them knew what Stephanie had done, but they were about to get answers soon. On April 13th, 2017, 9 months following the death of Zadie Wren Cooper, Stephanie Diane Smith went to the Athens Police Department, walked in, and openly confessed to killing Zadie. The officer was caught off guard. In a small town, crimes like this aren't frequent, and this was an open case that they had been seeking answers for a long while. According to Oxygen, Athens Police Chief Floyd Johnson said that she was completely lucid during her confession and was in a stable state of mind. This is where the layers of Stephanie Diane Smith began to unravel. Authorities now had to complete the gut-wrenching task of putting together the remaining pieces of Zadie's murder. The answers that they had been seeking for 9 months had been standing in front of them all along. Stephanie had carried on via Instagram the entire time, essentially leading investigators on a secretive goose chase. The posts seemed authentic, laced with grief. Once she finally confessed, police were able to get a clear image of what happened that night. During a conversation with an investigator post-confession, Stephanie admitted to having multiple mental health issues. On the night of the smothering, she also admitted that she had been off of her medication for 3 days. I'm unsure of exactly which medications she was on or exactly what she was diagnosed with, but one thing I know as someone who also struggles with mental illness is that you cannot just stop taking your medication. You need to taper off slowly under the supervision of a doctor, specifically a psychiatrist, especially if it's a cocktail. Just simply stopping can lead to so many dangerous side effects, and a doctor really needs to be the deciding force in whether or not someone is in a position to begin tapering off. Based on the photo that she posted on her Instagram feed, the one with the handful of pills, it seems like she had been on quite an extensive mix of various medications. Again, it's unsure what each pill was, but the mental health-related hashtags made it seem like they mostly were for those issues. During a somber news conference, Police Chief Johnson told the media, quote, "She went into Zadie's room, put a pillow over her head, her face, she was sleeping on her back, and smothered the child. A short time later, she realized what was going on. She removed the pillow. Zadie was not breathing, and she called 911, end quote, according to reporting done by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Pre-confession, investigators had been awaiting results from multiple medical and forensic reports after the autopsy turned up clear. I'm not entirely sure why Stephanie decided to confess at this particular time, 9 months later, but I wonder if she thought that they could be closing in on her as a prime suspect. The autopsy showed nothing. She was clearly suffocated. Nobody else was in the house at that time. Stephanie was really the only person with answers, so this is just a guess, but I wonder if she started to feel like they were zeroing in on her and she panicked. Police Chief Johnson declined to share Stephanie's diagnoses with the media, leaving even more questions about what the motive or reason for this murder was. He did say, quote, "It was very clear that she was in a very good frame of mind. She knew exactly what she was doing. She was talking with us. She wanted to get this out, that she had caused this," end quote, according to Crime Online. Investigators wanted to know why she lied to them during her initial interviews after Zadie's death. She stated that she was afraid of what would happen to her if she confessed. But she also acted as if she had absolutely no clue what happened to Zadie. But there's still something even more chilling about this case, her blog. I mentioned some of her Instagram posts where she openly wrote about how much she missed and adored her daughter. These posts initially seemed to lift any suspicions off of Stephanie because they were just raw, heartbreaking, open-ended narratives. But aside from her Instagram account, she also ran a personal blog called Living Without Z, A Mother's Journey Through Grief. I was really surprised to find that the blog website is still live, active, and you can read through all of her posts. I'm going to link it in the description for this episode if you want to take a look, because I think that this is really a monumental part of the case that clearly shows that Stephanie was either in denial, feeling extreme guilt, or just wanted to get the attention off of her as a potential suspect. The titles of some of these blog posts are alarming. Dread. Guilt. Mental illness and grief. Suicide, reads another one, which was posted on February 22, 2017, less than 2 months before Stephanie's confession to the police. I want to just read a bit of that post as it helps provide some context to Stephanie's mental state around this time. I also just want to give a trigger warning. This excerpt does discuss suicide, so please listen with caution. Quote, "On Sunday, February 19th, 2017, I managed to slip my wrist trying to end my life. Lucky for me, the knives I had access to were dull, and slitting your wrist is much harder than they make it seem on TV. Skin is tough. I was not. Before I could do much damage, I was caught and driven to the ER. They glued me up and sent me to a psych ward in Gadsden, Alabama. It was the fourth time I'd been committed. As always, going to a psych ward really sobers you up. My sanity managed to come back, along with all of the reasons I should not have done what I did." End quote. This is difficult to read, and again, I'll keep reiterating that I am not a mental health professional, just someone who has struggled with her own mental health since childhood, and I've been in various types of treatment throughout my life. Stephanie clearly and openly documents the state of her mental health. She posts about what her diagnoses allegedly are. She shares grim details about a recent suicide attempt. Any investigator, just with a quick, simple Google search, can learn so much about Stephanie Diane Smith and how she was feeling mentally. Obviously, there's so much more than just a Google search. I'm sure that investigators likely spoke to any of her doctors during their investigation, but she really put a lot of it out there in the open, and I was trying to find what her motive for this was, but really don't have a clear-cut answer. Only she would know that. Just based on my research, it feels multifaceted. My best guess is that she wanted attention away from her as a suspect by openly grieving, but I actually do think that she was grieving. That's probably going to be a controversial statement, but after reading through a ton of reports about this case, I think that because she was not on her medication, she blacked out and didn't know what she was doing. She told investigators that she, quote, "sees red, and when she sees red, she doesn't know what happens until it goes away," as reported by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Again, mental health is not an excuse, but it can be a reason. She murdered her daughter. It's heinous, and it's brutal, and it's a heartbreaking situation. That poor little girl had so much of her life left to live in happiness. If Stephanie had stayed on her medication, I truly don't think that this would have happened. I'm curious as to why she stopped taking it. What prompted her to make that decision? Was she having unbearable side effects and just decided that she couldn't handle how the pills made her feel anymore? Like I mentioned earlier, you can't just stop taking any medication for mental health. You will go through withdrawal, and oftentimes the reverse will happen, meaning if you were taking medication for anxiety and all of a sudden just stopped taking them without a doctor's supervision and tapering plan, it's highly likely that you'll start experiencing intense anxiety. Stopping cold turkey is very, very dangerous. The chemical levels in your brain will go all out of balance, and in this particular situation, my best guess is that that's what happened here. Stephanie's trial was delayed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. She remained in jail until August 2020, when she was finally put on trial for the murder of Zadie Wren Cooper. Stephanie pleaded guilty to a reduced charge of felony murder, as reported by ABC News. Her trial was quick and to the point, and Stephanie was convicted and sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole. It actually doesn't surprise me that the judge offered the possibility of parole here. The goal of incarceration is usually, in appropriate cases, rehabilitation. There really haven't been any updates on Stephanie's prison sentence, but I'm going to guess that she'll remain on medication in prison and receive some type of regular mental health treatment. It's not reported if she has already begun her sentence. One thing about this case in particular really sticks to the edges of my gut, and that's the quote that Police Chief Johnson told the media following Stephanie's confession. Quote, "she sees red," end quote. He noted that she was in pain over what she had done when they spoke to her after the confession. But just that line, "she sees red," sticks to me like glue. It really gives a glimpse into the mind of Stephanie Diane Smith. And I kind of took that quote literally, like, right before you faint and everything in your view turns white. I don't doubt for a single second that she feels remorse. I really think she does, and I also think that this could have been easily prevented. Stephanie and Zadie's father were divorced. They had joint custody. And I'm not totally sure of his level of involvement with Zadie, but I don't think that came into play here. The real overarching question of this case is, why did she suddenly stop taking her medication? According to Black Bear Rehab, quote, "The body is an interconnected system, and an imbalance in one area can lead to problems in others. Some health conditions are more difficult to address in patients with untreated depression, and when patients are taking multiple medications, abruptly stopping one can lead to an imbalance and improper dosing of others." End quote. This was written in an article I found about stopping mental health medication cold turkey, and it nails into the point that I was discussing before about how dangerous this can be and how quickly one's brain chemicals can become unbalanced. I don't think that there was a particular motive. I don't think that Stephanie was even conscious of what she was doing until she stopped, quote, seeing red. This will never excuse the fact that she murdered her beautiful little girl and carried on pretending like she didn't. Mental health cannot be ignored, but it can also never be an excuse. Zadie Wren Cooper deserved so much more than for her life to be cut so short, and I hope that one day, Stephanie Diane Smith fully understands the scope of what she did, how it impacted Zadie's family, and that it cannot be taken back. Thank you again so much for tuning in to this episode of Criminal Mind. As I did last week, I wanted to shout out some of the podcasts that I've been listening to this past week. Drama Queens, aka the greatest podcast to ever be created, Missing on 9/11, Toxic, the Britney Spears story, Popcast, the interview series with Zane Lowe, Renegades, Born in the USA, and of course, Crime Junkie. Most of these are not true crime related, but I like to switch it up and delve into other genres. Drama Queens in particular, which is a new podcast hosted by the three female leads of 2000's teen drama One Tree Hill, Sophia Bush, Bethany Joy Lenz, and Hillary Burton, is the most soul-fulfilling podcast I think I've ever listened to. This show shaped my young adult life in ways that I cannot explain unless you've seen the show. Each week on Drama Queens, they're watching an episode of the show and chatting about it in depth. My heart is just so full and happy and genuinely excited for these episodes. So if you are a One Tree Hill fanatic like me, I urge you to check it out. Anyway, I am truly enjoying the process of creating this podcast, and I hope anyone who's listening is enjoying what you're hearing. I definitely think that I'm falling into more of a routine when it comes to writing out these scripts and doing the research to prepare. So I'm hoping that as I continue to move through each week, the episodes get lengthier. This one is a little shorter, but it's really hard to write in this genre because it depends so heavily on accuracy. So I've just been selecting cases that aren't too overwhelming in terms of piecing together a timeline and compiling sources. I want the episodes to be compelling and vivid while also being as accurate as humanly possible. You can connect with me on all socials at IamRavive across the board. Links to all of the sources used to help me write this episode, including Stephanie Diane Smith's blog and personal Instagram page, can be found in the episode description, as well as my link tree. Again, if there's any case in particular that you think might be a good fit for Criminal Mind, reach out to me and let me know. I've been selecting cases for each week a month at a time, so I decided on the cases for the first four episodes right from the get-go. I'm going to start looking for cases for next month, so please give me some suggestions that fall into this niche. If you like what you're hearing so far, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, and share with all your true crime addicted friends. See you next time. Love, Revive.